Good evening, all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is Tuesday, 23rd November 2021. So we will be continuing with our new series, the Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, or Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. Earlier on, we have finished the Sutra of Innumerous Meaning. That's why now we move on to the next series, which is the Lotus Sutta, or they call it the Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So the English exact translation is the Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are basing on Master Xuan Hua's commentary series, which the link we have already sent to you. So afterwards, we will proceed with the link. I will explain to you in more detail afterwards. Okay, good. So can you all see the page? The 3-4 Lotus Sutta, Fa Hua San Bu Jing. So tonight is a very auspicious night because we are going to start on a new series. So out of these 3-4 Lotus Sutta that he started about 2 years back, we have managed to finish the first fold, which is the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, or Sutra of Innumerable Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Jing. So under Sutra of Infinite Meaning or Innumerous Meaning, there are three chapters. Chapter 1 is on virtue, which we have completed. Chapter 2 is on proclamation of the teaching, which we have also completed. And chapter 3 is the 10 merits, which we just completed last week. So now we are starting on the second series, the second fold Lotus Sutta itself, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So there is a total of 28 chapters within this Lotus Sutta, so Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So this sutta is very important because this is the major Mahayana sutta that the Buddha spoke regarding the cultivation. And it linked to a lot of prediction which he made for a lot of his disciples. Many of his disciples who has been predicted to be Sammasambuddha are also mentioned in this sutta. And this sutta is very elaborate because it also teaches all the teachings that the Buddha taught over that 45 years period when he was a Sammasambuddha. So there were a lot of these division within the Mahayana tradition. So they divide them into the five periods where the Buddha taught the Dhamma. Then from that five period, they break it down into 8 teachings. So all these are very clearly expounded and taught within this Lotus Sutta. Then a lot of skillful means that the Buddha used over that five period of teachings, they were also explained within the whole of the Lotus Sutta. So this particular sutta is a very important sutta, where it is the follow-up from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. So Sutra of Infinite Meaning, what we have gone through are the important aspects of Bodhisattva practices. You want to go the Bodhisattva way to cultivate Sammasambuddha, to perfect yourself to become the fully enlightened one, which is a Sammasambuddha. Then this Sutra of Infinite Meaning is very useful. The first chapter that talks about the virtue are the virtues of great beings. So this Sutra of Infinite Meaning, chapter 1 is very important. It talks about the virtue of great beings, all of the bodhisattvas and all the great beings, how they develop the virtue, after they develop their cultivation, then from there you know how different they are and why they can develop such practices, how they can devote themselves and perfect themselves. Then chapter 2 is on how to teach, the proclamation of teachings, and you have to develop extensive exposure, experiences, understanding in order to do your work and your duty. Then chapter 3, of course, talk about the 10 special merits that the great beings or the bodhisattva will have to do this work, to complete this work, to finish this work. So this Sutra of Infinite Meaning is already very beautiful. But apart from virtue, proclamation of teaching and the 10 merits, we need to know the 5 periods of teaching that Sakyamuni Buddha actually used to spread his teaching. So over the 5 periods, he teach different type of teachings. Then this 5 period has been expanded into 8 type of teachings. So this 8 type of teaching is also very interesting. So all this, we will go through them. Then this Lotus Sutta, because it's very long, 28 chapters, it covers a lot of explanation, a lot of prediction, a lot of skillful means that the Buddha used, fang bian fa and all those things. Then why the teachings are taught in this way over different periods, and using different type of approach or skillful means. Then we also have what they call the more important aspect of how all the disciples of the Buddha that has the affinity to become Sammasambuddha receive predictions and proclamation from the Buddha. So all these are very interesting, and a lot of great beings are also involved in this Lotus Sutta. After when we start, you will have a better understanding of what this is. Then once we finish the Lotus Sutta, we will go to the third fold, the final section of this threefold Lotus Sutta, Fa Hua San Pu Jing. So the third fold is Meditation Sutra of Samantarabhadra Bodhisattva, or Puxian Pusa Jing, Puxian Jing. So this final chapter is on the way Puxian Bodhisattva develop the practice, the cultivation. And this one is very, very beautiful too, and it's very unique and extensive. So these are the things that we will cover. So today is the first series of this Lotus Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. We will start with the introduction, then only we slowly go in into all the various chapters. So I choose the series by this Master Xuan Hua is because, first of all, he was my refuge teacher, and of all the series that I found on the internet or Jin Hao sent to me, I found that he was the most comprehensive and suitable, because he has the understanding and his commentary is so good. So we use it as a basis or reference for us to develop the understanding, which we have been using quite often. Like the earlier Heart Sutta, we also use Master Xuan Hua's commentary, then the Surangama Sutta, and also what we call the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. We also use Master Xuan Hua's commentary. Except this Sutra of Infinite Meaning, or Wuliang Yi Jing, we use the Ciji Yun, or this master Zhen Yan Pasi. He wrote that book, Essence of Infinite Meaning, teaching from the adapted verse of the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. I found that book very useful, very relevant, and very well presented. So I use that. But when it comes to Lotus Sutta, I can't find a better one than Master Shen Huang's on. Although it's very long, but it's very comprehensive and very beautiful. Okay, so this part is the introduction. So remember to go through this introduction before you listen to the sutra proper. Now we were off the light and we can have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. Then after that only we will commence the official commencement of this Lotus Sutra. Miao Fa Lian Huang Ji. Okay. So just relax body and mind completely. Then maintain awareness to stabilize your awareness nature. With that, we can make use of that stabilized awareness nature to meditate, to cultivate, to develop wisdom, understanding, to insight into phenomena. Okay, so I will let you develop the meditation on your own. Like I explained just now, we have finished the first fold of the Threefold Lotus Sutta. Originally, Fa Hua San Bu Jing means Fa Hua Jing. There are Threefold Lotus Sutta within the Fa Hua Jing. So we have completed the first one, which is the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wuliang Yi Jing. So this Sutra of Infinite Meaning is very useful. It covers three chapters. First chapter is on virtue of great beings, all the bodhisattvas and all the mahasattva, the great beings. They have very special virtue. They are not ordinary enlightened beings, but great beings. That goes the bodhisattva way, take the bodhisattva vow to become Sammasambuddha. And they are beings that have perfected themselves for a very long period of cultivation. And they did the perfection until they become Sammasambuddha. So this is a very unique chapter, the virtue of great beings. Then on proclamation of the teachings, which is chapter 2, also very useful. It teaches the bodhisattvas and all these great beings how to actually expand on their understanding, perfection, and teach. Then after that, we have the chapter 3, which talks about the inconceivable power of the 10 merits of these great beings. So the first merit, second merit, until the 10th merit, which we have completed them all. Then now we are on the second fold of the Threefold Lotus Sutta. The second fold is the Lotus Sutta itself, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So today we are going to start on this series. So I would like to make use of this occasion to thank Sister Susan Tay of Klang, and also Miss Lee for coming today to offer me that full series of this Lotus Sutra book. In Mandarin, it's called Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing. So Miao Fa, the English translation, is the wonderful Dhamma. Lian Hua is lotus flower. Lian Hua Jing. So Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing, the English equivalent or translation is the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. So if you want to get a complete PDF link of this series that we are going to follow, which is from the City of 10,000 Buddhas by Venerable Master Shen Huang, my refuge teacher. You can click onto the notice that we sent out to you. When you click on it, you will have this main page, a commentary by Venerable Master Shen Huang, City of 10,000 Buddha, is my refuge teacher, the late Master Shen Huang. So this Dhamma Flower Sutra, or the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra, it has a total of 28 chapters. So you look at the content, you can see clearly on the screen. First is the introduction, where he introduced the five periods where the Buddha Sakyamuni shared his teachings. Then they subdivide this five period into eight teachings. Then they explain the five profound meanings of this five period of the teachings. Then after that, we have the translator. Of course, the main one is, I think, from India, that came over to China. They did the translation. Then we have the 28 chapters listed. First is the introduction, which is quite long and quite complete. It's very good. I will go to review address. Then the expedient devices or way. These are skillful means that Sakyamuni Buddha used to teach the Dhamma. Then the parables. Parables also very good teaching, skillful means and explanation of teachings. Then chapter 4 is on the beliefs and understanding. Chapter 5 is medicinal herbs. Then we have the chapter 6, which is conferring predictions. So there are a lot of disciples of Sakyamuni Buddha at that time who received prediction to become Sammasambuddha. So when we go through this chapter, you will understand. Then chapter 7 is the analogy of the transformed city. So this one is about the Nibbana or the sainthood way and the ultimate Nibbana realized by those of the Bodhisattva and great beings that has no outflow. The transformed city is like a conjured city. It's not it's given as an analogy, as an example. So this transformed city is for you to understand. Then chapter 8 is a 500 disciples receive predictions. See, here alone, 500 disciples receive. Then chapter 9 again, bestowing prediction upon those studying and those beyond study. Means when you are on the sainthood way, cultivating those studying and those beyond study, seekers and asikas, they also able to give prediction because Sakyamuni Buddha has the ability. Then chapter 10 is masters of the Dhamma. Then chapter 11 is vision of the jewel stupa. Then chapter 12 is about Devadatta. This one is a very detailed write-up and story of Devadatta, how he established causes and conditions with Sakyamuni and became what he was. There's a lot of things about karma that we can learn from here too. Then chapter 13 is exaltation to maintain. Then chapter 14 is happily dwelling conduct. So these are all very important Dhamma teachings. Chapter 15 is welling forth from the earth. Then chapter 16 is the task come one's lifespan. Then you have chapter 17, discrimination of merits and virtue. Chapter 18, rejoicing in accord with merits and virtue. Then chapter 19, the merits and virtue of a Dhamma master. Then chapter 20 is never slighting bodhisattvas. This one is very important. Not only bodhisattva, never slight any living being. Every living being is a potential Sammasambuddha. Chapter 21 is the spiritual power of the Dasgupta one. Then chapter 22 is the entrustment. Then chapter 23 is the formal deeds of medicine king Buddha, Yao Si Fo, Bodhisattva. Then chapter 24 is the Bodhisattva's wondrous sound. Then chapter 25 is the Pusian Pusa only. Oh no, sorry. This is universal Dao or Kuan Si Ying Pusa. Then you have the chapter 26, the Dharani. Then chapter 27 is the past deed of the king, wonderful adornment. Then chapter 28 is the encouragement of the Bodhisattva, universal worthy one. This one is Pusian Pusa. So that covers the 28th chapter. So now we will move on to introduction. We will go into the sutra proper. Introduction. Okay. So actually, before I start, I would like to again thank Sister Susan Tay. She gave her own set to me, the full set of Lotus Sutra. I think 16 volumes by Master Shenhua. And volume one is, I hope you all can see. This one is a thick cover version, which is very good. This one is volume one. So I will read from here easier. You all follow from the digital copy, the PDF digital copy. Okay, so part one. The five periods and the eight teachings. But before that, the original text has more things. I will read to you so that you understand. Namo Bun Si Si Jia Moni Fo. So they pay respect to our original teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha. Then they have the I think there is this drawing which depicts at one time the Buddha dwell in Mount Gadrakuta. So this is where the sutta was spoken, near the city of the king's abbot, together with a gathering of great bhikkhu, 12,000 in all. So this one shows you a draw up of the Gadrakuta. So there were 12,000 bhikkhu. Then together they have the National Palace Museum Archive. Then they also have the National Palace Museum Archive that shows the stupa of many jewel Buddha. Then within this stupa of many jewel Buddha, there are 80,000 Bodhisattvas and Mahasattvas gathered at the Dhamma Flower Assembly. So this Lotus Sutta is a very unique sutta because there's a lot of Bodhisattva and Mahasattva involved, 80,000. All have been irreversibly established in Anuttara Sanyap Sambohi, means they actually can realize Sammasambuddhahood already. All had attained Dharani and the eloquence of delight in speech and turned the irreversible wheel of Dhamma. So these are the photos or pictures of all this related to the teachings. Then there's another National Palace archive that depict great bhikkhus who were great arahats were at this assembly too. The outflow has ceased and had no more further affliction. Having attained self-benefit, they have cast off the bonds of all existing and their heart had attained self-mastery. Then there is another one, National Palace Museum Archive, that depict King Sakha, Sakra Devanan Indra, and his retinue of 20,000 gods also came to listen to Sakyamuni's wondrous teaching on the Lotus Sutra. Then finally, of course, we have the photo of Venerable Master Hua. Then the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutra Volume 1 introduction. So under the introduction, we have the content page. The content page. The content page, I think, is not written here, but I read to you. The 8 guidelines for the Buddhist Translation Society, BTTS, that did the translation and the book. Then a few words of explanation, then forward outline, then the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra, Volume 1, introduction. That is where we will commence afterwards. The 5 period and the 8 teaching, the 5 profound meaning, the translator, chapter 1, sutra text, the simple explanation by the Venerable Master Xuan Hua. Then of course later on there is this biographical sketch of Venerable Xuan Hua, the biography. Then the 18 great vows of Venerable Master Xuan Hua also stated at the back. The 8 guidelines for Buddhist Text Translation Society are standard. Last time, the other sutta that we went through, the Heart Sutta, 6 Patriarch Platform Sutta, and the Taiman Sutta, etc., they have this. So I will just quickly read through. A volunteer must free himself from the motive of personal fame and profit. A volunteer must cultivate a respectful and sincere attitude free from arrogance and conceit. A volunteer must refrain from aggrandizing his work and denigrating that of others. A volunteer must not establish himself or herself as a standard of correctness and suppress the work of others with his or her own fault finding. A volunteer must take the Buddha's mind as his or her own mind. A volunteer must use the wisdom of Dhamma selecting vision to determine true principle. A volunteer must request virtuous elders in the 10 directions to certify his or her translation. A volunteer must endure to propagate the teachings by printing sutras, sastras, texts, and Vinaya texts when the translation are certified as being correct. Then there's a few words of explanation. In the present volume, as in other Buddhist Text Translation Society publication, the sutra texts appear in bold typeface at the first, or an otherwise significant appearance in the commentary. So the reader may quickly find explanation of any particular phrase of the sutra text. Verses are indicated by italic type as a helpful guide to the reader. A translation of the outline of the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra compiled by Great Master Aoyi is given in full at the beginning of the book, and the individual outline headings are shown with their corresponding passage of this sutra text throughout the book. Then there's a foreword. Master Hua first outlined briefly the 5 period and the 8 teachings of the Tian Tai school, which was systematized by the great master Qi Zhe. Traditionally, the Dhamma Flower Sutra is explained according to the Tian Tai method. Master Hua then used the Tian Tai's 5 profound meanings of explaining the title, describing the substance, clarifying the doctrine, discussing the function, and determining the teaching mark to introduce the Dhamma Flower Sutra. The introduction also includes a biography of the translator of the text, Great Master Kumarajiva. He is a very famous master, Kumarajiva. So because of him, we have this sutta. Then we will read the verse for opening a sutta, which is very useful. I read to you and you develop the faith. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, with this, we will go into the proper introduction. The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Sutta, Volume 1, Introduction. Okay, you can read from the PDF file. Well, I will read from this text. In explaining sutras, some use the method of the Tian Tai school and some use those of the Xian Shao school, two great teaching schools of Chinese Buddhism. The Tian Tai school was systematized by the great master. There are two versions of the translation, Zizi and Ziyi, between AD 538 and 597, who divided the Buddha Sutra or teaching into five periods and eight teachings. The five periods are the Avatamsaka period, then the Agama period, the Vaipuya period, the Prajna period, and finally the Dhamma flower or Mahaparinibbana periods. Then within this five periods, eight teachings are distinguished. The storehouse teaching, the pervasive teaching, the separate teaching, the perfect teaching. Then you have the sudden teaching, the gradual teaching, the secret teaching, and the unfixed teachings. Each of the five periods listed above is likened to five kinds of milk product, as will be seen. So this one is the example or analogy that they use so that it's easier for you all to understand. So the first period is the Avatamsaka period. After his enlightenment, the Buddha first spoke the Avatamsaka Sutra. The sutra consists of three volumes, but only the last of which exists in the human realm. The other two still been stored in the Dragon Palace. Having mastered all the literature in the world, the Bodhisattva Dragon Tree Longsu Pusa Nagarjuna went to the Dragon Palace to read the Tipitaka. While there, he memorized the last volume of the Avatamsaka Sutta. Since he had the ability to memorize anything after having seen it only once, he read the sutta once and brought the last volume back with him in his memory. When the Buddha spoke the Avatamsaka Sutta, only the Bodhisattva heard them. So this is a very unique sutta for higher beings. Those arahats, means arahant, and bhikkhus of the Theravada tradition or small vehicle could not hear it. It is said that, so this one, I hope Theravadian will not be upset over what you hear. This is the traditional way the Mahayana put it. So it is mentioned that bhikkhus and the arahants, they have eyes but did not see the reward body of the Buddha. They had ear but did not hear the perfect sudden teaching. They failed to see the 10,000 foot tall reward body that the Buddha manifested. We may think that 10,000 feet is very tall, but compared to Amitabha Buddha's reward body, it is still relatively very small. As the verse in praise of Amitabha Buddha say, the light of his brow, means the eyebrow, shines round 100 worlds wide, as the seas are his eyes, clear and pure. His eyes are huge, truly huge. Most people are unable to imagine the size of one great sea, let alone four. The enlightened patriarch of the past who saw Amitabha Buddha's fine mark and adornment wrote such a verse in praise of him. Compared to Amitabha Buddha's fine light and violet colored eye, everything else is very small, including the 10,000 foot reward body that Sakyamuni manifested. But those of the two vehicles, the Savaka, or the sound hearer, and the conditioned enlightened one, or the Pacheka Buddhas, did not see, even though they have eyes. They had ear, but they didn't hear the perfect sudden teaching. Those are the two way who had ears, but they did not hear the Buddha spoke the Avatamsaka Sutras, Great Dhamma. So the period of speaking the Avatamsaka Sutra was for teaching great things or great bodhisattvas, the Mahasattvas of the Ten Directions. The five periods of the Buddha's teaching are synonymous or symbolized as milk product and to the rising sun. The Avatamsaka Sutra is compared to the whole milk, the full milk, the whole milk, raw and unprocessed. Is likened to the newly risen sun, which first shines on the high peak. Dhamma spoken by the Buddha is analogous to the sun, and the high peak are analogous to the Bodhisattva to whom the Buddha first spoke the Dhamma to. They are like the high peaks, because the Bodhisattvas are the highest among living beings, as far as cultivations are concerned. Then we have the second period, the Agama period. Agama is a Sanskrit word meaning incomparable Dhamma. For none of the Dhammas of non-Buddhist religion can compare with it. That's why it's called the Agama. It surpasses all of them. During this period, the small vehicle or Theravada tradition teaching was set forth. It can be compared to coagulated milk, which is extracted from the whole milk, and which is easy for children to digest. Straight raw milk is very strong and nourishing, and so is used to represent the Avatamsaka teaching. The Agama teaching is likened to coagulated milk, good for children. As the Buddha taught the Agamas, the sun rose 100 feet, and its light reached the dark side in the valley, that the light of the Avatamsaka, the newly risen sun, did not reach earlier. So even the smallest adherents of the small vehicle and the most deluded people could understand this Dhamma. So the Avatamsaka Sutta is considered to be part of the sudden teaching, although it is also called the gradual teaching. The Agama period is called the storehouse teaching. So the Vaipuya period, Vaipuya also Sanskrit means expansive. During that time, the teaching expands. And during this period, the teaching pervades the former Agama teaching and the subsequent Prajna teachings. It is like cuddle milk, good for children and adults. Both those of the small vehicle or the Theravada tradition and those of the great vehicle, the Mahayana tradition, can study the sutra of this period. It is represented by the time between 9 and 10 in the morning when the sun shines at the high peak and level ground. Then the fourth period is the Prajna period. Prajna is the separate teaching, and it is a means of entering into the great vehicle. Prajna is called the separate teaching because it's separate from the pervasive teaching of the Vaipuya period that precedes it, as well as from the perfect teaching of the Lotus Nirvana period that follows it. The separate teaching can be compared to butter, which is extracted from the Kadomuk and suitable for adult. It's also like the period of from 10 until 11 in the morning when the sun shines upon the entire world and is approaching but has not yet reached the known position. Then we have the Prajna period. Prajna is a Sanskrit word because it is an honored term. It is not translated but kept in the original language. Also because it has three meanings, it is considered a term with many meanings and is therefore not translated. There are three types of Prajna. So this one, in the earlier sutra sharing, the Heart Sutra and also the Six Patriarch Platform Sutra, we have learned this. The three types of Prajna is similar to our three turning of the Four Noble Truths type of wisdom. First one they call literary, then contemplative, the second one, and the real mark. So literally means the first turning wisdom, Sutamaya Panya, after hearing the teaching, the sutta, as proclaimed by the Buddha. Then when you contemplate into it, reflect, inquire, and develop more stable wisdom, then it develops into the second turning wisdom, which the Buddha called Chintamaya Panya. Now here they call it the contemplative pranya. Then finally, the real map is our third turning, Bhavanamaya Panya. After you have developed the cultivation, you actually develop the meditative training to insight into phenomena, to awaken. So this third turning wisdom is Bhavanamaya Panya, means pranya born of bhavana, or panya born of bhavana. So now I will read to you their translation. Literal pranya refer to sutra, shastra, and the vinaya, means the Tipitaka. It is transcendental literature. It is most certainly not the literature of the world. Knowledge gained through mundane writing is not pranya, but only worldly intelligence or cleverness. Actually, it should be knowledge. Contemplative pranya means that developed through the use of wisdom, one regards and illuminate all Dhamma. As is said in the Heart Sutta, when the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara was practicing, cultivating the profound Prajna Paramita Sutta, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they were all empty. So this is contemplative. Then the real mark prajna, real mark is unmarked and yet complete with all mark. It includes all mark. All mark flow from the unmark, and just that is the real mark prajna. By means of literal prajna, one gives rise to contemplative prajna. With contemplative prajna, one in turn penetrates to the inherent real mark prajna within one's own nature. Actually, a simpler way of explaining it will be follow our three turning wisdom as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha, the three type of panya, Sutamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavana Panya. That one will be more direct. Yeah. But to really understand how this wisdom comes to be, we really have to develop the cultivation. So I will explain a bit here so that people can develop the understanding. So literal prajna, or they call it from literature, means during the time of the Buddha, there is no writing. So you have to listen to his teaching, the sutra. So that time of wisdom is called wisdom born of hearing the sutta. That's the reason why it's called Sutamaya Panya. After you have listened to the sutta, then you develop some form of awakening or understanding. That is the first turning wisdom, Sutamaya Panya. When it comes to cultivation nowadays, it's different because we not only have writing, we have recording, we have internet. So you can access a lot of things. But the danger is you have to develop the ability to screen what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. Because this is now a very evolved world, very complicated. You got all type of people teaching all sorts of Buddhism and meditation too, and sharing of the so-called Dhamma or whatever. So you need to filter, you need to exercise understanding. That's why you must make great vow, great aspiration, invoke power of merits for causes and conditions to develop all this understanding. Then you must have affinity with great beings, with the triple gems and all those things. So if you can listen to the true, authentic teachings or Dhamma, then you have the past cultivation or ability to assimilate the truth, to understand the truth. Then first turning wisdom is possible. It can come about. But most of the time it's not easy. Unless you have good past, your cultivation in the past can support you. Like in the case of the Buddha's time, the chief disciples, Sariputta, and even Kondanya, upon hearing the sutta, especially Venerable Kondanya, the Buddha proclaimed the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Before he finished, Kondanya awakened and became a Sutapan. Then later on, Asaji just say two stanza. And again, Sariputta awakened to the way and became a Sotapan. So these are people who have cultivated before, perfected themselves before. Then upon hearing, they can awaken. Like this life, my nature also can. A lot of things, I heard the truth. Sometimes the person who spoke may not know what that thing is or deep enough the understanding, but my nature already understood and awakened. So all these are possible if you have your past. If you don't have, then maybe you have to listen to it many times. Like our Abhijja Sutta mentioned, constantly listening to the true Dhamma. So first condition to become enlightened being is to have Dhamma friends, according to the 10th step of the Abhijja Sutta. So having Dhamma friends for us as Kayamita is very easy. We have a lot of Dhamma friends. But after you have Dhamma friends, you will have condition to listen to the true Dhamma. So this condition to listen to the true Dhamma is available because we have the website now. And we have the transcript books. We have our Tuesday class, Thursday class, Sunday class, and the various type of sharing. Earlier on, before the MCO and this, what we call the pandemic, we used to have more what we call activity, spiritual activity. We have our Monday house down. So now, because of the MCO and all those things, or the pandemic, we have yet to return to normal. So we still can't have all those things. Then apart from the what we call the monthly house dana, we also used to have talk. I used to deliver Dhamma talk at various places. They invited me, HBA, and last time even Klangsai and many other Buddhist society. Then later on, we also have our annual spiritual trip. Then sometimes we also conduct what they call short annual meditation retreat at Sampo Temple. So the last 2 years, because it's not open, we have to skip it. So hopefully next year we may have the condition when it's open up back again. So it depends. So when we have all this, you will have a lot of opportunity to learn the teaching, to constantly listen to the Dhamma. And now with the recording, you should thank all those Kayamita who have helped out or donated in one way or other, or help out in making all this possible. So this short video, this audio file, video file, and the recording, they are possible because of the help of all these people and also our Kayamita fund that funded the website and the activity. So we all should have gratitude and we should thank them and we should rejoice with all this so that you all can have this repository of Dhamma material, a great wealth of Dhamma material which can allow you to develop clear understanding. So constantly listening to the true Dhamma is one of the important step two for you to develop the enlightenment. Then after that, you can contemplate and reflect on it to develop the faith and the understanding. That is step three. Then your faith in the Buddha and the Dhamma will be unshakable. Then after that, of course, you have to proceed to develop the wisdom. So this wisdom, constantly listening to the Dhamma, is the first turning wisdom that I have explained. Then as you listen, you should put it to test. Because this Dhamma or truth that the Buddha has taught us, stand up to investigation. You should develop mindfulness, heedfulness, awareness to put to test all the essential Dhamma that he has taught us. Then once they stand up to investigation, your faith in his teaching, in the Triple Gem, will be unshakable. Then you finish step three. Then as you reflect and contemplate and investigate into the Dhamma, you will also develop the second turning wisdom, which is the contemplative wisdom. And this one also will strengthen your faith, strengthen your understanding. So when this initial wisdom arises through the first and second turning cultivation and practices, you will develop what they call the step five, which is Sati Sampajana. You will have more and more awareness, mindfulness, stability of daily mindfulness, and your daily mindfulness will come with clear comprehension. So when you are able to develop step four, which is the initial wisdom, the Buddha called it Yoniso Manasikara, it will allow you to straighten your view, stabilize your mind so that you will not react like before, as a heedless sentient being to all your sense experience. Then when you don't react and don't stir your mind like before, you become more calm, more peaceful, more aware. There will be more and more space between thought. That's how you are able to develop the daily mindfulness, followed by that clear comprehension, step five. So once this one is been developed, your meditation will progress. Then you can use this Sati Sampajana to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness, to develop the higher wisdom, to actually put to test all the more profound essential Dhamma. You will be able to see clearly how you function as a human being, the Paticchasamuppada, the dwelling, then how to contemplate deep into all the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, how to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, then how to develop the cultivation of the four foundations of mindfulness, everything. That's how it's to be done. So when it comes to the meditative, the turning, they call it the real mark. Actually, the real mark is based on understanding and the meditation as taught by Huining. Huining, the sixth patriarch, his teaching is very direct. Take you direct to the true mind, the silent mind. He bypass all the method, technique, and the mundane mind. That one, he said, is wasting time. You cannot understand mind. You cannot develop the meditation. You cannot understand the teaching. Because understanding mind is very important. As a human being, we have two types of mind. The mundane mind, which is the most common. And when the mundane mind ceases or does not arise, then the true mind manifests. Actually, the true mind was always there. But when you think a lot, you became heedless. You have mental hindrance. That's why it clouds your true mind. And you are not able to develop the understanding. So because of that, you can't meditate. So Huining came out with the three hallmarks of his teaching, which is very profound, real mark, pranya. He said, we must start from no thought, wu nian. When you are without thought, you are naturally aware. Without thought, your true mind arises. You will realize your silent mind, which is your meditative mind, your awareness nature within. That's how he teaches. That's how you can progress. Then when you stabilize that, you can develop stability of daily mindfulness to really penetrate all the essential dhamma, to understand the profound prajna teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha. Then it will enable you to insight into phenomena, to awaken, to see things as they are, to develop the real mind, prajna. Then when the wisdom arises, you will come to understand the second hallmark of winning. There is no mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of others, no mark of life, existence, the noble truth, everything, dhamma. Then when you go beyond this no mark, you will cultivate until your nature's vibration become very, very fine, until your mundane mind cannot stand up to it, where it's too gross to stay relevant. So this mundane mind finally will collapse. Then it will drop off. When you drop off, your nature shine forth. Your supramundane mind shine forth. Your pure awareness nature shine forth. Because no longer clouded by your mundane mind, the thinking mind, which is too gross, it has collapsed. And during that time, you can have the third hallmark of winning developed. The third hallmark is no dwelling. So the mind that doesn't dwell can only happen when your mundane mind has collapsed. Otherwise, it can't happen. So this is how the three turning type of wisdom or three level of prajna can be understood. So if you can understand them this way, it will help you. Okay, we will go on. Oh, sorry. About 9:46 already. Maybe I go on a bit more, then we will end. Okay, so we move on to number 5. The Dhamma flower or Nirvana period. This is the ultimate teachings of the Buddha, the teachings of the wonderful Dhamma flower, Lotus Sutta, or wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. Do not look lightly upon the Dhamma Flower Sutta, means this Lotus Sutta. It is the Buddha's ultimate expression, the final Dhamma Dog. The four preceding periods were all taught to pave the way for the Dhamma Flower Sutra to arise. And so it is said that the Dhamma Flower Sutra opens up the provisional teachings and reveals the real. The teachings of the other four periods were manifest. Sorry, I read again. The teachings of the other four periods were manifesting the provisional for the sake of the real. Yeah, means they prepare you for receiving the real. The Dhamma contained within them were taught for the sake of the Dhamma flowers. The Dhamma flower opens up the provisional and establishes the real, thus dispensing with all formal expedient, skillful means, Dhamma Dog. So that is the reason why they need to be there. But Huineng straight away bypass them all. He straight away take you to the final one, the real mark. The Dhamma Flower Sutra is the Buddha's true mind. Same, Huineng taught about the three hallmarks of Huineng is also bring you directly to the true mind. Like Huineng say, if you teach Dhamma deviating from your self nature, you are teaching Dhamma that has mark, has no meaning. Yeah. Because the understanding is there is no mark, completely without mark. Yeah. So when you teach with mark, means you are using the mundane mind. You are using thought, which can never realize the Dhamma, which is beyond thought, beyond time beyond mind. Mind means the thinking mind, the mundane mind. So the Dhamma Flower Sutra is the Buddha's true mind. The Dhamma Flower Sutra is also the Buddha's true body. The Dhamma Flower Sutra is also the Buddha's Dhamma Kaya or Dhamma body. The Dhamma Flower Sutra is also the Buddha's reward body. Then the Dhamma Flower Sutra is also the Buddha's respond body. Students of Buddha Dhamma who have not thoroughly understood the Dhamma Flower Sutra have not yet experienced the genuine taste of the Dhamma. So you are not penetrated the Lotus Sutra. Means, according to Mahayana, you have not really experienced the genuine taste of Dhamma. Means, the true, genuine, penetrative Dhamma. The genuine, wonderful meanings of the Buddha Dhamma is contained within this sutra, which is called the Wonderful Dhamma. That's why the title is the Wonderful, they call it the Wonderful Dhamma, Lotus Flower Sutra, Miao Fa, Wonderful Dhamma, yes, Miao Fa. The Dhamma of this sutra is compared to the lotus, the rarest king of flower. The lotus grow from the mud, but remain unsoiled. Although its roots are in the mud, it grows up through the water, while rooted in the dirt. It transcends the dirt. The lotus flower is a wonderful, superb flower. This sutra is the ultimate sutra. It is said that with the Surangama, one develops wisdom. With the Dhamma flower, one becomes a Buddha. So that is the profoundness. Eh? If you wish to realize Buddhahood, you must certainly study this sutta. That's why this Lotus Sutta, Miao Fa Lian Hua Jing, is very important. In Buddhism, the Dhamma flower and the Surangama occupy the most important position, but especially the Dhamma flower, means Miao Fa. All the other sutra was spoken for the sake of the Dhamma flower. And so this one is called the King of Sutra. That we are now able to investigate the sutra is an unspeakable, wonderful opportunity. The Dhamma Flower Sutra may be compared to the sun at the high noon, which shine upon the entire earth, the high peak, the deep valleys, and the level ground. This sutra is the Dhamma door of opening the provisional teaching to manifest the real. For what one purpose did the Buddha come into the world for? The Buddha manifested himself in the world expressly for the purpose of speaking the Dhamma Flower Sutra. Now we have the chance to listen to it, and in the future we will come to thoroughly understand its wonderful principle. Thus, our very hearing of these sutras indicates that we have planted good roots for limitless aeons, which have now enabled us to encounter this inconceivable sutra. This is the most rare Dhamma assembly, so you should count your own good blessings. Eh? Okay, maybe we will stop here. Eh? Okay, we better stop here. Otherwise, there is still a lot more to go. We are only at page 8. So we stop at page 8. Eh? Then we will continue later. Eh? Okay, maybe I will give you a summary of what this 8 teaching is all about. Right? So of the 8 teaching, the first 4 teachings is called the storehouse teaching, pervasive teaching, separate and perfect teaching. So the Dhamma flower is the perfect teaching, the final. These 4 are called the 4 types of teachings. Then after the 4 type of teaching, there are also 4 methods of teaching. So methods of teaching is 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah? So actually they break into 4. Yeah? So the 4 type of teachings are called the sudden teaching, the gradual teaching, the secret teaching, and the unfixed teaching, means non-rigid and all those things. So this one we will go through next lesson. Yeah? So now we can open up for maybe I prefer it to be a Dhamma discussion because this topic is different. You can also report your meditation if you want to. But I'm more interested in having discussion with every one of you, so that you can understand this Lotus Sutta more deeply. This is a very important sutta, Miao Fa Lian Huan Xing, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra. Miao Fa, wonderful Dhamma. Then Lian Hua is Lotus Flower Sutra. So now we will open up. Anybody who wants to share anything can just come in. Can you understand what has been shared? And can you recall how our sharing of the Dhamma, the teaching, has actually developed the understanding of all the various periods of cultivation? Because I started with Theravada, then later on I integrated with Mahayana, then the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. We also integrate with the Heart Sutta, then the Diamond Sutta, the Surangama Sutta, and all these sutras help. Then we finish the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, the Wu Liang Yi Jing, is because it was the Bodhisattva way. Otherwise, this teaching will not come about. So we went into this Fa Hua San Bu Jing, is the Threefold Lotus Sutras teaching, is because of the Bodhisattva way that came about, because of causes and conditions. So that thing come about, then we actually develop the causes and conditions, and we share all this, and it has become so wonderful, so beautiful. Then based on whatever I shared just now, you should have the understanding of what this whole teaching is all about. How come the Buddha teach that way, the five period and all those things. Then how the Theravada tradition, how it started, which I also explained. Then why over the years it has become what it is. It loses its potency to awaken living being. And we witness the period since the Buddha's time until now. If the authentic teachings are still there, preserved, maintained, and taught, then there should be more and more enlightened beings. Shouldn't be what we are experiencing now. So all this are very clear understanding that you can develop. Then today, I think, because Sister Susan from Klang, together with Miss Lee, they were very kind. They dropped by to pass me the whole set of the this wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra book. It was offered to me by Sister Susan, because she has this book, but she said she never read them. She had it for so long. Then it so happened, I have some, but not a complete set. Then I want to have a full set so that I can refer to. I'm more used to hard copy, because soft copy, you have to go through the internet, not so easy. So everything fall into place. They came, they make the offering, then we rejoice. Then they pay respect. Then they also brought her some food, which they were very generous. I think they were sending this food around. Then we also sat down and had about an hour to 2 hours short discussion. The topic was very good. So we go through the teachings, the understanding part, and how it has evolved to what it is from what we used to be. So all this was very meaningful, very beautiful. Okay, now I will open up for sharing. You can share what we shared just now in the afternoon when you came with Miss Lee too. It just forming the whole picture of the teachings. How in the early days, before you all had the understanding, what were being taught was so different, thought-based. Then from thought-based, it has evolved to awareness-based. Then now, you have this beautiful Mahayana teachings, especially the Heart Sutta, the Diamond Sutta, the Surangama Sutta, then the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. Then now we have the Threefold Lotus Sutta. So all these are very beautiful teachings that actually connect the whole thing to let us understand how beautiful the Buddha has actually proclaimed his teaching and come out with the teaching for the five periods, for the 45 years that he actually lived as a Sammasambuddha. So all these are very beautiful. Or if you want
to share. Thank you, Brother Teo. It was a very comprehensive, run through.
Ah, yes. Summary. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Comprehensive summary.
Yeah, very comprehensive summary.
Of the whole cultivation and the teachings.
Yes.
Which is very difficult to come by because, like what you say, I think it's very true. Even you ask the Mahayana practitioner or people who learn Mahayana, actually, it's not easy. I find Mahayana not easy to start off with also. And even a lot of Mahayana, they are not well versed in the whole teaching. Well, Mahayana, actually, they have so much teaching. It's a lot more than Theravada. At least Theravada one more systematic. So the Theravada one, the only confusion they have is the method, technique, and the teacher, and the various type of deviation and discrimination and argument. Also, apart from that, the teaching is quite standard, quite authentic. Because it's only one teaching actually, but the interpretation of it, the commentary, a lot has debated. And because of that, it becomes very confusing. But for Mahayana, I can tell you, it's not easy to understand. If you are new to Mahayana, you are very confused because of the numbers of sutta. And the Mahayana's problem is, like I used to share in the early days, Theravada has all the essential teachings. The foundation of Theravada is very good. All the essential teachings of the Buddha are there, authentic, well preserved. But the explanatory part, the commentary part has deviated. That one is a problem. Yeah. But like I explained to you and Sister Lee, they are called Theravada because they are the teachings of the Theras. Thera are monks who have more than 20 years of ordination, full ordination, then they qualify as Thera. So they are called the Orthodox tradition, means the teachings of the elders. And these people are very orthodox, very conservative, and they don't want to allow any mixture or anything which they are not sure to come into the teaching. That's why they chop everything until it's called the conservative Theravada, orthodox tradition. So a lot of things they don't recognize. Even Mahayana teaching or a lot that is not in the sutta, they don't recognize. So that is how it actually come about and happened. And because of that Thera, that teaching cannot flourish, cannot expand. That's why in the ancient time, during the period of controversial debate that time, I think maybe a few hundred years back, Chief Reverend, our late Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda, he used to share with us. He said he is grateful to Mahayana because during that debate, actually Theravada cannot stand up. They failed to debate with the Hindu teachings in India. So Buddhism, which started in India, was assimilated into the Hindu teachings and kicked out of India later. That was a problem. Then later Mahayana came in and went and cleared up the debate and they won. That's how Chief Reverend said, because of that, Mahayana become relevant. So they have the first council, second council, then they agree to take in the Mahayana teachings and all those things.
Is that but the same what? Council relative?
Or yes, I think council? Third council, if I'm not wrong. Then only it starts to recognize and allow the thing to come in. Then they have the Abhidhamma added. Actually, they were very reluctant. Because Abhidhamma was not inside. Because without the Abhidhamma, they cannot debate. They lost all the debate. And because of Abhidhamma teaching, the higher teachings, they won the debate. And the Abhidhamma come from actually Mahayana teaching. But Theravada categorized them in a very orderly manner to suit them. But the actual understanding of the teaching is still Mahayana side. So what I'm trying to share with you all is how it evolved and become what it is. The pro and con of Theravada and Mahayana. Actually, the two teachings you should cultivate together. They become seamless and become very beautiful, you understand. So whatever that Theravada has is the Pali chanting that they pass down. That was very authentic. But like I explained to you and Miss Lee, the interpretation of it is no longer authentic. The commentaries and all these things, the explanation. Because they come up with method, technique, thought-based type of teaching that didn't really explain the real teaching. That's why it's no longer authentic, no longer penetrative, cannot awaken living being. That's why we are seeing the result of what happened, less and less of the awakened being. Then when we come over to Mahayana tradition, the negative part of the Mahayana teaching is it's not systematic. They don't have the basic teaching clearly spelled out. This basic teaching of the Theravada tradition, like all the three evil roots, Noble Eightfold Path, Four Foundation of Mindfulness, all the various suttas, they are only taught in the Mahayana tradition. If you have those master or teacher who really know them and teach to you, whereas you go to a normal Mahayana monastery, you don't learn all those teaching. But these are not taught. They teach you all the Mahayana sutta, which actually are very abstract and esoteric. Then they have all these six page here, platform sutta, all those things. So that one take the teaching to another problematic level. Because without the foundation, the base, you can never comprehend the higher teaching. It's like you're building a building without doing a proper strong foundation to stabilize your understanding. You put up the high-rise building, you will get into trouble. So the pro and con, you can see very clearly. But Mahayana has its higher teaching. But this higher teaching, like I explained, are for enlightened being to understand. Because these are sutra spoken by the Buddha. Most of it, except the six patriarch, platform sutra, all those things, by enlightened being. And if you are not enlightened, the words to you is Dhamma knowledge. It's not the real Dhamma. But if you have your past, you have cultivated, you have the understanding, then the word has its meaning. So the problem of Mahayana is, unless you awaken, you are the real Dhamma master with the understanding of teaching. Otherwise, you teach, it will be the standard teaching that they have in the books, in the text, the sutta, the commonly accepted one. Like the flag and the wind analogy and all those things. Then the heart sutra, they have their teaching. But those teaching, like Theravada, they are not penetrative because they are not the true teaching. Whereas the enlightened being, the awakened one, when they teach, is completely different. Because they realize the true mind. They know what the true mind is, the silent mind, that nature, everything. So from there, it manifests and they teach. That's like straight from the heart, direct from the heart. But not in most of this teaching that you find in the Mahayana tradition. So you go to a Mahayana temple, you find it very difficult to develop the understanding and the training. That's why I don't blame. There was one monk, remember, I think a Malaysian monk, if I'm not wrong. He started with Mahayana. Then after 4 or 5 years, he started to find out why he cannot progress. Then finally, he came to the conclusion, it's not the authentic teaching, he said, Mahayana fake one. Then he go back to Theravada. Then he ordained another Theravada tradition. There are many such cases, because people cannot understand. But when you understand, Mahayana has his teaching, Theravada has his teaching. And like I explained, from Theravada's teaching and understanding, you can penetrate and understand all Mahayana teaching. You don't need any other teaching. The anicchang dukkang anatta, paticca samuppada, the essential dhamma. From there, you truly understand Theravada, penetrate Theravada. All the Mahayana teaching, you understand. That's why I can teach, I can share. Of course, you can say, I have my past and all those things. But actually, I reflect back, it's the same as the Theravada teaching, except the Theravada don't understand the profoundness of their teaching. They are anicchang, dukkang, anatta. Do you know anatta, that word, is very profound, very complete. Anatta is not just non-self, not a permanent unchanging entity. Anatta includes sunyata, emptiness. That's why Theravada has that word, sunyata, but it's not taught. It ends up, Mahayana teach sunyata, the Heart Sutta. The five aggregates are empty. Empty of what? Empty nature of existence, but they cannot understand. Empty doesn't mean nothing. That's why the Buddha teach the five aggregate form and mind, even though it's not you, not real, impermanent, non-self. Of course, finally empty, right? The five aggregate is empty. Wu yun jie kong in the Heart Sutta. But why people cannot understand? Because this is karmically conditional. This is not our true mind, our true nature. That's why they are very confused. When the Buddha teach, like I explained, the five aggregate of form and mind, under the first noble truth, the final summary, the Buddha say, in short, if you have self-delusion, sakayadity, and you attach and grasp onto this five aggregate of form and mind, then it condition grasping. That's why upadana khandas dukkha. It becomes grasping aggregate because you cling, you grasp. And this one is not your true nature. This one is impermanent. That's why the Buddha say rupang anicchang, vedana anicchang, sanya anicchang, sankara anicchang, vinyanang anicchang. Then rupang anatta. Then sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe sankara anatta. So all this is in the teaching, but they already lost their ability to comprehend its deep meaning. So when the Mahayana teaching talk about sunyata or emptiness, it's no different from anatta. It's actually anatta. And with anatta, you can understand all this. That's why, if you look at the Theravada Sutta, why did the Buddha say rupang anicchang, then rupang anatta? Rupang is form. The table is also a form. the house is also a form, no life. Then he say rupang anatta. You don't tell me the Buddha is so naive as to say table is non-self. There is no life inside that. How can it be non-self? But he says it's anatta. Because it's not a permanent unchanging entity. It arises through condition, dependent originating. Then it will cease when condition cease to be. That's why it's anatta, empty nature, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why it is sunyata, means empty. Empty in the sense, not nothingness. Empty means it is empty of whatever that you want to grasp onto or cling onto. Means, like I used to say, empty nature or existence. Finally, empty. When you are born into this world, you come empty. When your form and mind cease, you die, you pass away. When consciousness separate, also return to nature, also empty. There's a lai e kong, qi e kong. So ultimately, no reality. Empty nature existed. Whether you exist or you don't exist, all these are not real. No ma, not you, but segmented life of your nature that come. That one is true. That one is real. But that one is impermanent. Go the way of nature. That's why you have to understand all this. Then you will come to understand that he know you, he know me. Your every segmented life that we come through the coming conditioning, that one is not you. That one is just one segment of your life, karmically conditioned for you to arise in this conditioned world. To do what you want to do. Like I used to say, every life we arise, we are born as different beings. Which one is us? Billions of them. None of them are me. But I cannot deny that this life, my segmented life, is this form and mind, which you call gratitude. And this one exists. But this one is not me. This one is karmically conditional for me to do my work. Perform my function. And this one is subject to karma. That's why you have to understand all this. Then you will understand why the Buddha said this one is unreal, impermanent. When you attach, cling, and grasp, it leads to suffering. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. It's non-self. You cannot cling onto it, grasp onto it, hold onto it, and say, this is me, this is I. Well, that will be delusion. Foolish. So all this understanding has to be there. So no different from Mahayana, from Theravada understanding, you will penetrate Mahayana teaching. Everything is the same. So this is what people don't understand. So when you understand, you will rejoice because this teaching is so beautiful. Okay? Can follow us?
Sadhu.
You want to say anything or not based on your own understanding or based on what you have understood? Like just now you mentioned, it's a very good summary.
From what you have just explained, I see the link. You know, from Theravada as a base.
Yes.
Yeah, and linking it to the further, or if you want to be called the higher teaching.
Higher teaching.
Of the Mahayana.
Yeah.
Which, if we put two, one and one, or the two together, it becomes
complete.
Very profound.
It becomes
very
complete. Yeah.
Yes.
Because there are pros and cons, weaknesses
and
strength on both sides.
Yes.
So you take the strength of both sides, combine, and you have a complete teaching. Because Theravada like the higher teaching. Mahayana like the basic teaching.
Right.
Yeah. They don't have the foundation. That's why you go into Mahayana, they teach you all the Zen way. Sweep floor, clean monastery, carry water. They never explain daily mindfulness for foundation. No, they just say you do. So,
right.
Then chant, nianpo. They don't know what they are doing. Actually, chanting is to develop the spiritual faculty, the faith.
Aye.
The saddha, then the virya, then the sati, chant until, like just now you and Miss Lee were here, we discussed, like Miss Lee say, you chant until the vibration and the awareness become one. No one is chanting. And that is sati. That's why when the spiritual faculty is there, the panya will arise. When the sati stabilized, samadhi is there, sati samadhi will allow them to see things as they are. Awakened. That's why Panya developed the five spiritual faculty. So it's nothing to do with chanting actually. Chanting is to develop the faith, the spiritual faculty, where you have faith in the great being, like Amitabha, like Kuan Yin. Then that faith will drive you to consistently cultivate so the virya arise. Then when you do the chanting, until the chanting and the awareness become one, sati is firmly established. Then samadhi will be established when all this stabilizes. Then with sati and samadhi, faith and virya, wisdom will arise. That's how they develop the cultivation. And without them knowing that it is the Theravada teaching, the five spiritual faculty becoming power, balas, that awaken them.
Right.
That's why a lot of Theravada, they don't understand. They go and comment. And they dare to say all this, which was very frightening. They say, Mahayana, how can it be true? Especially Pure Land teaching, they say, Chan also can become enlightened, no need to meditate. No Noble Eightfold Path, nothing. They didn't even find out about the teaching and the understanding of the teaching. Do you know the Pure Land teaching is so profound? They have the other sutta called Wu Liang Shou Jing, Amitabha's longevity okay. Sutta. That one, the teaching is very profound. It can tell you about your coming obstruction, your cultivation obstruction. Is it? Suo zi zhang, fan nao zhang. Everything you know is an obstruction. That's why knowledge binds. So under the seven stages of purification, Theravada, the teaching is there. Ditti visuddhi. You have to purify your view. Ditti. Then citta visuddhi. You have to purify the content of consciousness. So all these are there. So without understanding, they simply comment, then they get themselves into argument, conflict, and division. That's why the two like cannot see eye to eye, but actually it complements each other. It's the lack of understanding of both the devotee that leads to the misunderstanding and the argument. Those who understand never argue, like I always explain. What is there to argue? The basic teachings are the same. Who call it Theravada, the Thera? Who call it Mahayana, the Mahayana practitioner? But the whole teaching comes from the essential Dhamma of the Buddha, the basic teaching of the Buddha. We started off with the Four Noble Truths and its three turning. And the Four Noble Truths and its three turning under the Mahayana is also taught, but it's not as a Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. It's taught under a separate teaching. They call it the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, San Chuan Fa Lun, Si Shen Ti. So they have the Sutra of 42 section oral thing. It's all the various Theravada Sutta subdivided into many of these teaching. Some of them run, no longer authentic, which I saw. But most of them are still quite well preserved. But the interpretation of it can give problem at times. So because of that, the two tradition must come together and iron out the difference and let the understanding comes in. That's why when I teach, I never want to separate them. You can come from Theravada tradition, no problem, I can also teach you. You can come from Mahayana tradition, no problem, I can also teach you. That's why in my pre-puja, I started off in Mahayana, then I end up with Theravada. Do you realize that? I pay respect to Pho Pusa, Namo Pensi, Sishya Muni Pho. Then after that, I start Arahang, Sama, Sambuddho, Bhagawa. Then I end up with all the Pali chanting. The taking of the refuge. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, all those things. Then the five precepts. Then we end. So from Mahayana, it ties back to Theravada. Then the teaching that I share is the same. It's the Buddha Dharma. The teaching that the Buddha had taught is not an interpretation. It's the understanding. Because the understanding is very clear. Like just now, I tried to explain to you and Miss Lee why the Theravada tradition cannot progress and get stuck if they are doing thought-based meditation. Thought-based meditation is caught in the field of thought. And what is thought? Thought is basically respond from memory. And thought is memory. That is the only instrument human being or sentient being understand or cultivator understand, like how we started. You remember just now? You asked for meditation. Teach me how to meditate. So what are you asking? Method, technique? Maybe skillful means or whatever. So if you follow that tradition, that teacher, then he will teach you that particular method or technique. And they believe the method and the technique defines the meditation. But they don't understand mind. They don't understand the basic teaching of Theravada. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, all things arise. And they never had the mindfulness to see what that mind the Buddha is referring to. That is the mundane mind. And that mundane mind, under the teaching of the 12 wings, the Buddha said, avijja paccaya sankhara, that one they cannot understand. Sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnanam paccaya navarupam, they cannot understand. That's why they cannot penetrate the teaching. So what happened is, when you are mindful, when you are aware, you can see all this. Then you can understand how avijja paccaya sankhara means dependent on ignorance, you start to think. Well, you don't understand. You want to know. You want to experience. Because you reason, you analyze. So that trigger of thinking. Thinking is what? Thinking is the mind make contact with the brain. That's why you go to the brain and think. So when you make contact with the brain, like the physics experiment, upon contact, consciousness come to be. So at the moment of consciousness, it's the pure consciousness, the pure thought consciousness before the content went in. But because they are not mindful, they cannot see how the memory, through its views, opinion, and conditioning, actually created the wrong thought, the wrong view, and stir the mind, the habitual tendency, everything. Well, all these are your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, your views, opinion, and conditioning. Your whatever doubt, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, phobia, everything inside your memory. And you accumulated them. Then thought is respond to this type of memory. That's why you have fear. Then you act according to this type of memory. That's why you cannot act. You are acting according to your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your insecurity. And this is not acting at all. This is not Noble Eightfold Path. Noble Eightfold Path is right view leading to right thought. You act with right view, right understanding. But human being got only one instrument, thought, memory. They don't have Dhamma. Don't have Dhamma means don't have wisdom. There are a lot of people study Dhamma thought-based, knowledge-based. That's why all that one cannot apply. There is no yoniso manasikara, wisdom arising. Cannot prompt you. That's why they cannot act. Then every time they get into trouble, they will recall. What did Brother Theo say? What did the Buddha say? They try to act according to memory, recalling what I say. But if you don't understand what I mean, you don't have that type of wisdom, you cannot act. It is still knowledge. That's why you can quote me, but be careful. If you don't understand what I mean, you quote me, you can get into big trouble. Because sometimes they say, hey, brother, you say let things be, you know, means harm into my jaw. That is not what I mean. Let things be means accept the reality of the moment first, because that is the reality. What is? Condition like that, like the Buddha said, things will be like that. But after that, you still act. Act with noble effort power. Right view to understand what is going on. Very likely is karma, like the Buddha said, we are all born of our karma. Heir to our karma. Condition is part of our karma. We are what we are because of karma. So when you understand this, then you will know how to act and reverse all this. Means if I know it's karma, I won't get angry. I won't stir, I won't blame. I don't do any of those foolish things. I accept at peace. Then what must I do? I do what I have to do. If I need to ask for forgiveness, I ask for forgiveness. I need to repent, I repent. Then I vow not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha. That's how I start my cultivation. Then I develop merits, wholesomeness. Then I invoke power of merits for causes and conditions to turn around, to progress along the path. That is what the teaching is. But it's not taught in this way anymore. It's all taught, go and do vipassana. Learn the jhana, learn the jnana. Experience this, experience that, note this, note that, go retreat. All this is no longer the authentic teaching, but popularly accepted, taught to almost every Theravada practitioner, and later on also Mahayana practitioner. So if you go through this and you don't have the understanding, like Hui Ning said, to teach the Dhamma apart from the true nature, the self nature, is like teaching thought-based meditation about Ma. You cannot penetrate the true teaching. You cannot give rise to true understanding. So all these are very beautiful sharing. That's why what was shared just now was good. That's why I bring it up again, because there is condition so that other Kayamita can also learn. So with this, I think we have to end the first part, 10:37 already. You got anything else or not? Susan, three more minutes for you. Do you have anything else to summarize or?
You have summed it all up.
Yeah. Maybe the whatever final words that you want to share or give to the Kayamita.
It will take it for me. It will take a period of time to link.
Yes, you have to listen to this sharing again. Then slowly write down the notes. Then you will understand it deeper. Then you can penetrate. Then after that, your cultivation becomes very deep. But if you don't write it down, you cannot see the full picture. You cannot see the full picture. Then you will go back to your old way. But when you see the full picture, you wake up. It's like, all this, why so foolish? Why so gullible? Follow what people tell us to do. Because that is the conditioning from the early days. And it's not easy to root out. But these are popularly accepted practices, like very well established. And people dare not go against. And certain traditions are so strict. You go in already, you cannot learn other traditions. They can be so rigid. But for me, it's up to you, because it's your life. That's why I never say, Kayamita, come to my class, cannot attend other people's class. No, you go everywhere. I realize my Kayamita is everywhere. They join whatever society that they have, but there is no such thing as restricting people. We are their life, their understanding. Let them develop, let them decide, let them cultivate based on understanding. By
having gone through the different tradition, I put it that way.
Yes.
It gives a wider perspective of things.
Yes, definitely.
You know, then you can actually compare
and develop also, more understanding.
Mm. Yeah, more understanding from there.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so without having to separate them.
Correct. That's why, like the Buddha said, these Dhamma stand up to investigation.
Right.
Why do you fear? Let people investigate. If it's the truth, it will stand up to investigation. That's why it's ehipaseko. No need to worry. So people can go anywhere, try any tradition or what. Finally, it's up to them to decide which tradition they find more suitable, where everyone is different. Then based on understanding, finally, they will come back to the authentic teaching, where you cannot lie to yourself. If you, after doing it for so many years, you're still the same and never change character-wise, personality-wise, habitual tendency-wise, then what are you doing? Means that so-called practice has not given you any fruitful result. So you have to be wise. You have to really wake up and say, hey, what am I doing? Am I wasting my time repeating all this for so long and yet I have not changed? My emotion, my anger, my fear, they are still there. There is no virtue in me. I have not changed. That should be the way to investigate, to reflect, to contemplate, to find out. Your cultivation is about improving oneself, developing self-knowledge, understanding. Then from there, we straighten our view. We drop our delusion. We root out our wrong view. Then we straighten our view and we change over for the better. That is what cultivation is all about. Not about psychic and magic and all those things.
Yeah.
And what you say is true. Yeah. Mm. Anything else, Susan?
No, I think that's it. The only thing I realized is to go direct, not necessary, or having the what you call the info and knowledge
of understanding.
Of what
the cultivation is.
The cultivation is.
That's why that is
really,
pariyatti.
It's really not necessary. It's really not necessary to be going round and round.
Yeah, so that you can avoid being gullible, chasing around and leading nowhere. Because if you don't understand, you become gullible. Then you are doing a lot of foolish things without understanding thought-based meditation. Then it doesn't produce the desired result. It doesn't lead to progress. So all this, the individual has to find out.
Right.
And I think a lot of Kayamita has already have the understanding. That's why finally they realize this teaching is so different. You cannot find elsewhere. And they themselves try it out. Then they change over for the better and their life improves. They become so different. And a lot of them come out from their problem, their depression, their suffering, their misery, their whatever career problem, relationship problem, the first noble true reality. A lot of people with depression, sickness, disease. They came out of it. They were so happy. Even the brother Eric recently came back from Bangladesh or what. I think he went there for as an expat for 5 years. Do you know he recovered from his problem, cancer and other things? Then the daughter also, that one was the most beautiful. And the wife, they all have very strong faith. But last time they don't understand. They went all over. Then they went to Sui An. Then the Subang, the river. The first time he came to Thursday Club, Sui An brought them, the whole family came. Oh, and they developed the understanding and become so different. Earlier on, they don't understand. They follow what people say. They say, Vesak Day, go and buy the bird and release them. Go and buy the fish. I say, you can do that, but find out whether it helps you or not. Because it's not about releasing all this. It's compassion. Compassion comes from the heart. When you really cultivate, then you develop the virtue, the understanding, and the compassion through your practice. Not listening to what people tell you. Then you just go and do. Money to buy on you. Is there any compassion? But when you feel it, you really want to help. And then compassion manifests. You see somebody suffering. And there is condition. But nowadays, a lot of bogus ones too. You have to be careful. So you need wisdom to do all this. So these are the things that we need to understand. And he recovered beautifully. Even the doctor, actually, that type of chemo that he went through, a very low chance of, but fully recovered. And by now, I think the doctor must be grown up already. And the wife contacted me and said, Brother Teo, can you include my husband, Eric? Yeah, he is back from the assignment already. So they're very happy. And Eric, that they also, I think, sent a message to thank him for welcoming him back. So a lot of Kayamita experience all this. That's why it's very beautiful, the journey. And Sui An would know where he brought a lot of people. Okay, I think we have to end. Sadhu.
Thank you.
So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.